and welcome back to another episode of Banterbox, a review podcast run by the team here at Mad Artists. Each week we will be reviewing a different production, whether it's a movie, TV show, book, etc. And this week we watch Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. My name is Danielle, and here are the Mad Artists that I have with me to help break this down today.
Hey everyone, it is Samuel as always.
Hello, hello, it's John.
All right, so first impressions, guys. Me and Sam hadn't seen this one. John, had you seen this one already?
As of last night, I have watched this three times.
Oh, okay. Three times. Yeah, I kept thinking,
I would have been surprised if John hadn't seen it, honestly.
Well, this was about what I expected from just, like, what I've heard about the movie. It was pretty close to what I've expected. Just the absolute bonkers craziness of it. Like, but I kind of pictured, I don't know why, but for some reason I pictured more of like an Austin Powers thing, and I don't know why. So I was a little surprised that wasn't as much of a thing.
Yeah, definitely not an Austin Powers. Austin Powers was a bit more vulgar than this
one. Yeah, this one kept that PG-13 rating pretty strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, this is about what I expected, though. Yeah, I wasn't too, like, thrown by it. What about you, Sam?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really have any expectations going in. I knew it had a lot of people in it that I liked, and
it was a powerhouse
really,
of a cast.
Oh, yeah, really, sure. I didn't have any expectations until I saw it was directed by Edgar Wright, and then I had all the expectations. But yeah, no, it was, I mean, I don't know. I didn't really know what it was going to be like, so I didn't really have thoughts one way or another.
Yeah, I was just excited because I knew, I knew there were a lot of big actresses in it, but I just kept seeing more and more, actors that I knew pop up every 2 seconds, and I was like, oh, that's the guy from Parks and Rec, and that's the girl from Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen, and, like, just kept going on. It was great, because everyone played totally different characters than I've ever seen them play before, except Anna Kendrick. She pretty much played her type.
Yeah.
Well, and Aubrey Plaza.
And Aubrey Plaza. And Aubrey Plaza. She just played herself, pretty much. This one came out in 2010. It was directed by Edgar Wright and was also written by Edgar Wright and Michael Bacall. And it stars Michael Cera as Scott Pilgrim and Mary Elizabeth Winstead as Ramona Flowers. You may know her also as Gwen from Sky High or as Huntress from Birds of Prey. You can watch this with a Netflix subscription. I can't talk today. Or you can buy and rent it on Vudu, YouTube, Prime Video, iTunes, or Google Play. It is all over the place. And the IMDb summary for this says, in a magically realistic version of Toronto, a young man must defeat his new girlfriend's 7 evil exes one by one in order to win her heart. So, Samuel, do you have stuff on our director and our writers?
Yeah, so the director is Edgar Wright, who is amazing. He's a British director. Most of what he's done, I actually read that this was the first non-British movie he had made. He's kind of most famous. He did some TV back in the day. He's most famous for his Cornetto trilogy, which I want to put in the hat at some point.
What is that?
It's really good. So it's a trilogy of movies starring Simon Pegg and Nick Frost that are they're action comedies. And they are all hilarious. It's Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and World's End.
I've at least heard of Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, Shaun of the Dead is very familiar.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're like, they're unrelated, but like, they're not. Like, okay. They're not a like linear story trilogy. Like, the two actors play different characters in each film. But even the supporting cast, it's basically the same cast in each film.
Okay.
Just with completely different setup. You have a zombie movie, you have a police cult movie, and then you have an alien movie. But no, they're really good. And then, of course, he's also super famous for doing Baby Driver.
Oh, yeah. Baby Driver was good.
Yeah, he did Baby Driver.
Baby Driver was good.
No, Edgar Wright is really, he's a really good director. So that's why I said my expectations went up as soon as I saw he directed it.
That actually makes so much sense, knowing that he did Baby Driver and then also did this movie. Makes oh so much sense to me.
And then Michael Bacall, he's actually done some acting. He hasn't done, like, many big parts, but he has a bunch of small bits and stuff. He's in a bunch of Tarantino movies. But as far as writing, he's most famous for writing this, Project X, and then he wrote the Jump Street movies.
Oh, the Jump Street movies. Yeah. I guess that makes sense, too. Yeah.
Which, I mean, 22 Jump Street was really good. 21 Jump Street was okay. 22 Jump Street was really good.
I don't think I've ever seen either of those all the way through.
Yeah, no, the first one's okay, but the second one has some really good comedy
in
it.
See, I've heard the opposite. I've heard that 21 was really good and 22 was okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't love the first one, but I really liked the second
one. Well, maybe we'll have to put those in the hat.
This is why movie reviews are dumb.
Yeah. As we do a movie review.
Please, watch everything on your own and make your own
decisions. Don't just listen to what we say. Go and actually watch the movie and see if you disagree or agree.
Let's be everyone honest, who's just listening to what we say?
Absolutely nobody.
Shout out to our 10 listeners.
So, we love you. So that our 10 listeners can get some content over here, before we go into this plot, does anyone have any like preemptive thoughts about anything?
Not really.
I mean, again, just the whole arcade vibe was fun. It felt in place. Unlike what movie was it that like had like the whooshing sound effects that didn't fit the theme at all?
Yeah, it was a movie we did that you were complaining
the
about.
The whooshing
that.
Sound
what
effects?
What movie was it? What movies have we done?
Total Recall?
Well, I thought you were talking about the Riverdale sound effects where it was like the like every 2 seconds.
Oh, yeah. It probably was one. Yeah. Because it was just every single time that they'd...
By the way, guys, we got John into Riverdale.
Oh,
ladies
yes.
and gentlemen,
John is watching Riverdale now.
I don't... Why?
I love it.
Why? No, I love how they stuck with the theme and it actually felt in place with the theme. And for those of you who do not know, Scott Pilgrim versus the World is actually based on a comic book series.
Yeah. If that wasn't obvious.
Starring the main character. I would say, you'll see, they put stick, all character drawings that are in the movie are from the original comics. And the little actual comic cutouts are also from the original comics. I have no idea if they redrew them, but it definitely came inspired from that.
See, I would have been shocked if it wasn't based on a comic, because I knew it was based on a comic just because when I clicked on the movie on Netflix, it said something comic, and I was like, oh, okay. And then I saw, like, all the, you know, the written-in comic sounds and all this stuff, and, like, every single camera angle looked like a comic book illustration. Like, it looked like they were clicking from one pane of a comic book to the next every time that, like, that it changed scenes. And so I was like, I feel like this was just taken, like so many scenes were taken directly from the comic book, just with the way it was formed and everything, which I love when people base something on a comic book and commit to it. Like, Into the Spider-Verse, I loved for that reason, that they committed so hard to the fact that it was, like, based on a comic book and they were going to make it look like
Zoom.
One. Zoom. Are you talking about the Zoom kids?
Yeah,
I haven't
seen
Zoom in so long.
I know.
Long.
Yeah,
you
with
just
Tim
threw
Allen.
Me back to when I was like 7.
Yeah, with Tim Allen and
I haven't seen that movie in like
I know
a decade and a half.
You just like made me feel like an absolute infant.
Wow,
that movie.
There's a line from that movie. I would not have remembered that movie. There's a line from that movie we used to quote all the time. My family.
I don't know.
It was whatever it was with like the cows.
Cows. I don't even remember.
Oh, yeah. I remember the scene because I want to say the character Gus, I want to say his name is Gus, he picks up a cow instead of actually going to Wendy's to get food. He's put down the cow.
Yes, that scene. We used to quote that all the time.
Has Courtney Cox in too, which was an interesting casting choice.
See, I don't remember any of the actors except for Tim Allen, and that's it.
And Tim Allen, Courtney Cox, and there was one kid. He played the kid that could pretty much inflate any part of his body. I don't remember his name, but he was really popular. Also very well known for his role in Santa Claus, I think, 2 or 3.
2 or 3. Are you talking about the kid who plays Charlie?
No, he actually played the second in command.
Oh, that kid. Yeah, because he was also in Cheaper by the Dozen.
Yep.
Yeah, as the neighbor kid. And he was in Kicking and Screaming. Like, he was in all that stuff.
He was
a
very popular kid actor.
Y'all lost me.
If I showed you a picture, you would know who I was talking about.
So my only thought going in, and this is just, it's a opinion that I have that I mentioned to Danielle, which is every Michael Cera part could be played by Jesse Eisenberg, and every Jesse Eisenberg part could be played by Michael Cera. They are the same person. They act like their acting style is the same. They look the same. Like
Michael Cera is less attractive than the man you showed me. I'll just say that.
I don't know.
Michael,
Cera is way more of the dork than Jesse Eisenberg.
Which is perfect for this role.
Which Jesse Eisenberg does play a dork a lot of the time, but he's a more attractive nerd than Michael Cera is.
I guess. Nerd. I don't know. I love Jesse Eisenberg, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I had no thoughts going in except, oh boy, this has been built up for so long. I'm going to see if it lives up to it. Because everyone has always told me, you haven't seen it? Oh my gosh, you got to see it. And whenever someone does that, I always like end up putting it so low in my mind so that I won't be let down.
This is exactly why we gave the prerequisite warning beforehand. Never trust anybody's original reviewing, because yes, it'll give you an expectation.
Yep.
Yes. All right, so let's dive into this. In Toronto, 22-year-old Scott Pilgrim is a bassist for his unsuccessful indie garage band, Sex Bob-omb. He is dating Knives Chow, a 17-year-old high school student, to the disapproval of his friends in the band, his roommate Wallace Wells, and his younger sister, Stacy Pilgrim. Which, I just love that they named a character Knives. And for,
wait,
so,
she's supposed to be younger than him?
Yes.
Yeah, it's intentional.
Yes.
She is 17 and he's 22.
No. He's talking about Stacy, his sister.
Oh.
Anna Kendrick's supposed to be.
Yes. Yeah. So she, that was a fun fact I didn't put in here, but that was something. She does play his, like, you know, a few years younger. Like, I think she's supposed to be 20 in this, and so he's 22. But actually, he is, like, 3 years younger than Anna Kendrick, so that's why. But yeah, he is supposed to be the older sibling. There was something you said about Edgar Wright that I was going to throw out, and I'm trying to remember. Oh, you said that this was his first non-British movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. This was another thing I didn't throw in, but I saw it. That apparently he was dead set on not casting any English actors because this was his first, like, North American movie. And so he was like, all, you know, American or Canadian, like, I'm not casting any English actors. I don't know if he succeeded on that, but that's what his goal was only casting, like, non-English. So I don't know if he succeeded.
I think the guy who plays the first X is British.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know his actual, I don't even know that actor.
I'm pretty sure he's British.
Well, so he may have failed on one count.
I think he was in Doctor Who at one point. I could be wrong on that.
Or maybe he can just do a British accent.
True.
Who knows?
Moving on. So Scott meets an American Amazon.ca delivery girl, Ramona Flowers, after having first seen her in a dream. So, all right. This is where I go into my confusion state. So it says in the IMDb summary that this is a magical realism thing. So that's why there's all this crazy stuff. The whole time, I kept, like, I didn't get that. I kept thinking that, like, every inch of it was just how Scott sees the world. And
that's how I took it.
Yeah, that's how I took it. So thinking that this is actually what's happening, I'm like, bonkers. Like, no way. I kept thinking this is just how he sees the world around him, is like he's hearing about these exes and then seeing them places, and then they come up and kind of just like wave around in their face. And then he imagines that his like telling them off is a battle or something. Like, that was my only thought.
No. I think, again, we're dealing with a movie fully committed to the comic book standard. And the only way you can really make comic book standards work is by embracing that sense of magical realism. So everything I saw it as, like, that's actually happening. Now, the transitions were, I thought, I didn't take those as realistic.
Well, yeah, like the quick transitions, right, like in the middle of scenes.
Well,
right. Yeah.
Well, again, that was my whole, oh, this is a comic book thing. Because that's the thing that's in, like, every comic book I've ever read, is sharp transitions with no smooth switch. It's just suddenly you're in a new place and a new time, and oh, there it is. Like, and with the magical realism, I can take as reality in a comic book, but in a movie, I was having so much trouble. I was like, this has to just be in his head, like, 100%, all of it.
Nope.
And apparently it's not. So that,
he's literally killing
yeah.
people and turning.
So that was another thing, was when she comes in, you know, delivers his package and everything, and he's like, you were just in my dream just now. And she's like, and he's like, is that weird? And she's like, no, I just used like a little mindscape in your head as like a quick way to get over here. And I'm like, wait, hold on. Like,
that was just another way of saying that she's living in his head rent free. That was a joke.
No, I thought that was her, like, being serious.
No, that was her being sarcastic and joking about how she was just living in his head rent-free because he couldn't stop thinking about
it. See, here's my
thing.
And
that's why he was
dreaming.
Is,
if you're going to have a magical realism world, the sarcasm is going to be real hard to read. Because then I'm going to take everything you're saying as absolutely real. And so, like, stuff like that, I'm like, no, that's got to be real. That's got to be straight up, is that she actually can, no, like, psychically travel through his mind.
That was her just being sarcastic about how he couldn't stop thinking
about
it.
Dude, make up your mind, Edgar. I got to know what's real and what's not, because it's very confusing to me. So he loses interest in knives, which me and Sam commented that knives is basically every white guy who's obsessed with, like, Asian culture's dream. Like, straight up, she is every guy's dream.
Oh, no, like, it's straight up, like, they even joke about it. I think it's Kimmy who jokes about it. It's either Kimmy or Young Neil. Pretty much, they joke about how, like, whole scroll, it's Stacy.
On the phone.
She's like, schoolgirl outfit and everything.
Yeah.
And it's like, they straight up make a joke about how this is straight up some estranged dude's fetish.
This is a guy's anime fantasy.
17-year-old Asian girl who goes to Catholic school and
is obsessed with him and, like, adores everything. And is a virgin.
And has never even kissed a guy.
Yes. Yeah. Like, straight up dream. Like, I was... Right. And I feel like... I mean, I haven't read the comics, so I don't know how she specifically is illustrated in the comics, but from the way that they directed her, it almost seemed like they were directing her to be an anime character. Like, with all of her super exaggerated, crazy, like, facial expressions and, like, dramatic body movements and stuff. And, like, the way that she would, like, perk up at certain moments. I was like, she is straight up acting like, I mean, I've only read Death Note, but she was acting like, what is the girl who is,
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, who's, like, sort of Light's girlfriend. That was her. Like, straight up, that was her. With the whole way that she was acting. I was like, that's 100% just her. So I feel like maybe they based her on that. Again, I haven't read the comics, so I don't know if they actually made her, like, anime or if they just made her the same animation style. But I digress. Yeah, he loses interest in knives, but doesn't break up with her before pursuing Ramona because he's a little piece of trash and decided to hurt a young girl who has probably, I don't think, ever been in a relationship before. And she's about to get cheated on her
to
first
sit there and look at Scott Pilgrim as the hero is just a horrible mistake because he's just a garbage person.
But I think that's somewhat the point.
Well, I mean, the whole point is him learning to actually, like, be an adult and deal with his problems and not just run away from all of them. Because the whole thing is him being like, oh, but it's, I don't want to break up with her. Like, that's hard. And it's like, yeah, but you have to do it. Like, you can't just not break up with her. You have to go do that. Yeah, no, that was crappy on his part. I just kept being like, dude, just, like, literally, it doesn't even have to be that long. You just go and talk to her and tell her, I don't want to date you anymore.
It would be way more painful for them to either find out at the end or to... It's going to be way more painful to just sit there and let it sit and then try and date both of them than it is going to be just sit there and say.
Plus, yeah, Ramona is going to be like, okay, so what am I then? Like, if you couldn't even break up with your other girlfriend to be with me, like, you know, like, what are you doing? Yeah, no, I was just like, come on, dude. Like, it's not that hard. But yeah, so when Sex Bob-omb plays in a Battle of the Bands sponsored by the record exec Gideon Graves.
G-Man.
Scott is attacked by Ramona's ex-boyfriend, Matthew Patel. Scott defeats Patel and learns that in order to date Ramona, he must defeat her remaining 6 evil exes.
That boy was given so many warnings.
Evil ex-boyfriends. No, evil exes.
And he's like, wait, okay. Why do you keep saying that? Girl busts in through the window. Yeah, there was... Oh, so I think this has to do with it, and I'll mention it again at the end, but the fact that the first ex is named Matthew, apparently Edgar's now wife, when they were dating at the time, said that she had dated a bunch of guys named Matthew, and so I think that was why the first evil ex was named Matthew in this. I'm not positive, but I think so.
That's where he's from.
Where?
And that's where I know him as doing a British accent. What? Oh, yeah, and he is British. He's Chivrang.
That's Chivrang?
That's Chivrang.
No
from New
way.
Girl. Yep. Yep.
He's
most known for his role as Matthew Patel in Scott Pilgrim vs. the World and Chivrang in New Girl. And he is British because he uses his British accent in New Girl.
Okay, so he failed on one account to not cast an English actor. He didn't look anything like himself.
Yeah.
At all. I never... I think they even made him look taller because he's like a really short guy. Like, I guess he's like, he's average height, but he looked a lot taller in that. Which, granted, Michael Cera's not that tall, so maybe that was why he looked taller. That's so crazy, dude. They put so much on him to make him not look like himself.
Right.
Do you know who we're talking about from New Girl?
Chivrang? No, I have not. I fall asleep to New Girl. I don't watch New Girl.
I mean,
well, it's CeCe's fiance at one point.
Yeah, at one point she's getting married to a guy named Sugar Ray. He leaves her at
the altar, and yeah.
For Taylor Swift.
Yes.
Yes.
Fair.
Because Taylor Swift is a character in New Girl.
Yes, for one episode.
Wild.
Scott finally breaks up with Knives in like the lamest breakup ever, where she has kissed him in front of everyone, which, by the way, ballsy move for your first kiss ever, to just jump up on your man and kiss him in front of a bunch of people. Like, wow, girl. As someone who had their first kiss in front of a large group of people, that's terrifying. So I watched that and was like,
yeah, no,
girl. But yeah, that was awful, because then he lets her get out that she's in love with him. Like, he stands there and knows where she's going with it and lets her say it, and then says, yeah, okay, we need to break up. Like,
wasn't like a week and a half later that they break up?
I think so, because Wallace, well, I loved Wallace so much, the gay roommate. He I loved him so much.
Wallace is the best character.
He
in
was
this movie.
Amazing. Everything he did, I loved. Because he like throws him into a chair and is like, "You are gonna go break up with her right now because it's not fair." And then immediately out of the bathroom comes the guy that he just slept with, who's not his boyfriend. And Michael Cera is like, double standard. And he's like, okay, not the same thing. Gay rules are different. And just like throws him out of the house. I love it so much. Yeah, because Wallace was like, I'm not having any of your childishness. Go do this. And he just like sidesteps out of the breakup. Like, he breaks up with her and then literally sidesteps out of the scene and into a different scene. I was like, dude, okay. Immaturity. He breaks up with Knives, who blames Ramona and swears to win him back. This was the big anime scene I saw, where she's, I guess, with her friend or maybe her sister. They never define it. And so they're sitting like in her room and all of her stuff is so big and dramatic that I was like, this looks so anime style. Like, live action anime.
Like 25.
Yeah. She's like 25, like freaking out. Because of course she blames Ramona. Like,
I didn't know there was good music till 2 months ago.
My gosh.
Like, wow.
Remember high school when you didn't know what good music was?
Poor Knives.
Oh, man. Meanwhile, Scott proceeds to get attacked by and defeats the next three of Ramona's exes, Hollywood actor and skateboarder Lucas Lee, aka Chris Evans, a superpowered vegan, Todd Ingram, that was my favorite battle, and lesbian ninja Roxy Richter.
So, Danielle.
Yes.
The actress who plays Roxy Richter.
Yes.
Do y'all have any idea who she is?
I know that she played Michael Cera's girlfriend in Arrested Development.
I know she's from somewhere, but I'm not, it's not coming to me.
She voice acts Katara.
That's Katara? Are you serious?
Yep.
That's nuts.
I didn't hear it at all.
Yep.
Oh my god.
She's apparently a very, she only, I was just looking, because I'm looking up all the cast, because I've seen them all and stuff.
Oh yeah.
And apparently, like, her movie career kind of started taking off with this, but she's been like a pretty well-known prolific voice actor for a while.
Nice. I mean, she did have a really good voice, I remember. Like, you know, she was able to like make it sound really crazy.
Yeah, and she
maybe
was
that's
really,
why
she
I did, didn't
and
hear
she
Katara.
Well, and she was doing the Southern accent.
Yeah,
and
she
all that
she did
stuff,
like a
yeah.
Southern kind of raspy thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
The whole entire point was that it was very, very gruff, very edgy.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that was Katara. That kind of blew my mind a little
that's
bit.
That's awesome. That's so cool. I love finding out that these like are actually like all, you know, actors from totally different things that I never would have guessed.
Right.
That's awesome. Because that was my first reaction when I saw Kim, is I was like, that's the girl from Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen, the terrible movie with Lindsay Lohan that I'm probably going to put in the hat and make you guys watch because it's just craziest thing you've ever seen in your life. But yeah, she plays a totally different character. She's like a goody-goody in that. And I'd only ever seen her as that super, like, uptight goody-goody. And so in this movie, I was like, whoa, this girl's got range. Like,
oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah, she is very good. But yeah, so he also has to confront his own ex, pop star Envy Adams, aka Brie Larson. However, Scott grows frustrated during the process, and after an outburst regarding Ramona's dating history, she breaks up with him because she's like, I'm over it. If you can't handle all of it, then like, get out of here. My absolute favorite fight was definitely the vegan fight. That was too funny. All the digs at like how being a vegan is like makes you just a better human being and everything. I loved it so much. What were you going to say, Sam?
I was just going to say, I hated when Ramona was like, if you can't handle this, then it's like, do you not see how much you're putting him through?
Well, okay, this is why I thought that this was all just in his head. Is because I was like, there's no way this is actually happening, and she's expecting him to actually do all this. This has to just be that they are running
and when
into all of Rex's.
And when he expresses frustration, she's like, well, if you can't handle it, then, you know, then clearly, I don't know.
But that what I think me. Is that... You know, she wasn't bothered by knives at all, and she was just like, okay, and she kept trying to say, like, everybody has baggage, like, you know, you can't expect me to not have baggage, and that's kind of why I was like, okay, this has to all just be in his head, and this is just the way he's seeing this, is that she's being crazy, when in reality, what probably happened is that her exes have just been running into them, and, like, have kind of, like, you know, been rude to him, and he's just... like, you know, sort of sassed off to him or something and then, like, walked away. And she's been, and then he's gotten mad at her for having a history. And she's like, I can't help that I've dated people and they happen to be, like, appearing in front of us. That's why I kept thinking this can't be a real thing. Because I was like, this has to just be her saying, I have history. Why is that such a problem for you? Like,
no, I think it's fair to assess that metaphorically speaking or comparatively speaking, yes. She does have badges. That's like the whole symbolization with the league is that, hey, these are all my past relationships. And this is like kind of an unraveling of her backstory and what she had to go through. The league is physically being sicked upon her. And that's the magical realism portion is that the league is crashing down and it's Gideon G-Man who made up the league to sick down on the next boyfriend of Ramona.
Yeah. And I did like that the final guy was, like that it showed all these different kinds of, like, you know, some of them didn't go into as much detail, but there's all different kinds of, like, relationships that ended. And then, obviously, the BBEG is going to be the abusive, like, possessive one. Is going to be the one who, like, makes you think you have to be with him and, like, you have to do the right thing to make him happy.
Metaphorically, the chip.
The chip. What do you mean, the chip?
The chip at the end of the film.
Not metaphorically.
Well, yeah, no. Literally, but that's the metaphorical representation.
Oh, yeah. The chip in her neck. I see what you mean.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Because that, especially, like, you know, when she's sitting there, like, clearly she doesn't actually want to be with him, but she's like, I can't do anything about it. Like, and I've seen girls go back to terrible guys like that who have, like, they're just so possessive over them and they're like, it's not safe if I'm not with him. Like, you know, I don't feel safe. Otherwise, but then they also don't feel safe with him. Like, you know, he's reaching out and, like, petting her, and she's clearly like, I don't like this. Like, this isn't a good time. And when he hit her, I was like, there it is. I knew there was the abusive part of this relationship, and we just saw it. But yeah, that would obviously be the BBEG is going to be that. And I think it was more about, you know, sort of him having to not take care of her or, like, fix her, but sort of help her also face these past ghosts, like she has to sit there and watch him, like, sort of wrestle with it, and then she has to also revisit it. And so it's kind of like a complicated, when you date someone who has dated a lot of people, like, you know, you have to deal with the insecurity of, like, oh, you know, that person,
am I better or am I worse?
Exactly, am I better or worse? And you always want to be better, and so that's kind of him, like, having to deal with that, and her seeing that happen and being like, okay, I gotta, like, you know, I gotta help him with certain things, or I have to, like, you know, reassure him about things, or I have to do this and that. I guess it was just weird to me that when we think about it as magical realism, that's when I'm like, okay, hold on. it threw me for a loop. But yeah, so she breaks up with him because she's like, because he, also his outburst kind of didn't totally make sense. It was like, you know, how many douchebags have you dated? And she's like, well, you're the first one who hasn't been one. And then he starts being one. And she's like, okay, great. Like, now you're being one. You fit in with the rest of them. Cool. Good for you. Like, so he was kind of being a jerk in that scenario. Because she didn't call them to come and fight him. They just all showed up. And, like, were, you know, sent by Gideon. So, like.
However, I will admit the fight with Ingram Todd was the most one-sided fight that Scott had.
Mm-hmm. One-sided meaning,
like,
well, because Todd just
tossed him around.
Yeah,
like, right?
Todd.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Scott never physically got a hit in on Todd.
But he beat him with his brains.
Yes.
But that, he physically tossed him around like a ragdoll, so it was probably the most taxing fight he had. I mean, yo, Scott literally got yeeted to the moon and fell back down.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's allowed to be upset.
I'm not saying he's not allowed to be upset.
I don't think him being upset made him a douchebag at all.
No, not even a little. I didn't say that him being upset did, but him blaming her did, because she didn't call them there. She wasn't like, all right, guys, you have to come and fight my new boyfriend so that I know
to
that
be
he
fair,
loves
she
me.
Also was not helping him out that much. And I think that's kind of what he was upset about, is she didn't warn him.
Well, she warned him after the first one showed up, and she seemed genuinely surprised that the first one showed up. And then
she didn't tell him anything about them. Like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, do you ever want to stand on the sidelines and watch it happen instead of... Be honest. Do you actually want to sit there and talk in depth about everything with, like, your past relationships?
If my past exes are trying to kill my current boyfriend, yes.
Your current boyfriend. Okay.
They're trying to kill him. Yes. She should absolutely sit down and
have
a very long
This is, again, where the magical realism starts confusing it. If we put it into the reality of it, it's like the reality is just that these people are going to be coming in and out of her life. And so he has to learn to deal with them and, like, feel confident in himself.
Yeah, but in the world of the movie, they are literally trying to kill him.
And that's where my brain can't wrap around it. Like, I can't accept that as reality.
Well, and here's my thing, and I'll argue for both Ramona and Scott, is that Scott has every right to be upset, and I absolutely agree with Samuel, is that, yes, they're trying to kill me. I'd like to know the information that you have on them, because she knows what they're capable of. Mm-hmm. It even says in the backstory for Todd, like, he went to vegan school.
The vegan academy.
Now, granted, you know, who the heck knows what happens in Vegan Academy?
Yeah.
That you get brain powers because you unlock the 90% of your brain.
He turns into an elevated Zoom kid is what he turns
into. He goes Super Saiyan is what happens.
Yes.
But however, also the whole thing with Ramona's Stitch is that she came to escape it. She doesn't want to go back into it. And she knows that in order to tell Scott what's going on, she doesn't want to go back into it, and Scott has trouble wrapping his head around that. And I think at that point, Scott's outburst and lashing out at Ramona comes down to his seemingly inability to handle adult situations like an adult.
Yeah, and think about, like, her situation. I mean, she literally came to Canada to escape all these people and to escape her old life. And it followed her right when she started dating a guy that, like, seems to actually really care about her and, like, you know, seems like a nice guy. And she wants to actually give it a chance. And now she's being cornered by him to talk about all these past relationships she's trying to run away from. She's being cornered by all these people who are, like, you know, trying to apparently kill her new boyfriend. And she's literally back. She's between a rock and a hard place is where she is.
I get not talking about it. Until you take into account that they are trying to kill him.
Again, I can't wrap my brain around that because I can't do it.
The fact that they are trying to actually kill him makes it her responsibility to talk to him about it.
I can't accept that the reality is this magical reality.
Later, I think she does later. Yeah.
Like, she's like, I should have talked to you more about it, but
I think it's after he's dead that they talk about it.
So, probably. Wallace? I just found this out.
Yeah.
And he looks familiar. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen him in anything, but I now know why he looks familiar. He is the younger brother of one Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah.
I knew that.
Yeah, At the beginning of the movie, I saw the credits that said
so-and-so Culkin, and I was like, I bet he's related to Macaulay Culkin. Yeah. And then I meant to say it, and then I forgot. Yeah. So, yeah.
Because
Culkin, like, I feel like, familiar. Is not a common last name.
No.
So when I saw it, I was like, he's got to be related to Macaulay Culkin. Well, moving on. So at the next Battle of the Bands, Sex Bob-omb defeats Ramona's fifth and sixth evil exes, twins Kyle and Ken. I'm going to butcher this last name. Katayanagi
twins.
Okay, thank you. Earning Scott an extra life. So, yeah, I don't know. Again, all this magical realism, I don't get how he earned an extra life, but I'm going to try to just roll with it. But my brain is like,
because
flying.
It's the first adult thing he does. It's the first time he actually sits there and t- takes control of his life without having to be coerced into anything else. He does the adult thing and tries to actually, you know, like, think about it. If Scott didn't sit there and if, like, Kim didn't sit there and go, Scott, you need to talk to her before she's gone and, like, have that revelation of just, like, sometimes I got to do things I don't like to do. Scott was like, all right, I'm taking my life back into control.
Because that's when she leaves with Gideon.
Yes, that is like right before she leaves.
Okay, okay. I see what you mean. Yeah, so despite this, Ramona appears to get back with her seventh evil ex, Gideon. Sex Bob-omb accepts Gideon's record deal, except for Scott, who quits the band in protest. And I love that young Neil is just like, I can do it. I got it.
Right away.
and they all sign the contract immediately.
Even with his broken, even with Scott's broken bass.
Yes, he's like, I'm good. Like, I already know, I know all the parts. It's fine.
And they signed it on Scott's back.
Yes, they signed it on Scott's back, which I thought was very funny. Yeah, young Neil. Literally backstabbing. I have seen young Neil in so many things, and I can't think of one thing. He was, like, an actor in a bunch of, like, family movies that I watched as a kid. Like, for sure, I've seen him in, like, at least two, like, classic family movies.
The amount of familiarity with young Neil, I couldn't think of it. However,
well, I'm sure Sam is going to find it for us in a second here.
Yeah.
Let's see. Stuff he's been. He was in Evan Almighty.
Oh, he was the son in Evan Almighty.
That's right.
That's funny. Oh,
he was in The Perks of Being a Wallflower.
I don't think I've seen that one. I haven't seen it, but I need to because that's an Emma Watson one. Because she plays the main girl in it and she has like a black pixie cut.
That's the only stuff cool. I would know him from. He's also in Boogeyman, too. But I haven't seen. He was in Hotel for Dogs.
Oh, he was the boyfriend. That's right. He was. See, I knew he was in a couple of movies like that. Okay, so Evan Almighty.
My favorite young Neil line ever. He punched the highlights out of her hair.
Because he actually did. Like, he punched her so hard and she fell. And I saw, like, blue stuff all over the ground. And I was like, what is that? And then when he said that, I was like, oh, those are the highlights on the ground. That's what
my
that
favorite,
is.
My favorite thing is the fact that young Neil doubled down on the line. He was like, he punched the highlights out of her hair. And just makes direct eye contact with Scott. He punched the highlights out of her hair.
Every time someone, like, repeats something for emphasis, I just think of Drake and Josh. I'm repeating things for emphasis. Emphasis! That's all I think of is Josh constantly doing that.
Oh, and by the way, for context, at this point, Knives is trying to tempt Scott by dating young Neil.
Oh, yes.
Obvious, like nowadays it'd be like, that's a dumb text. That's like, okay, what's going on? But it's like,
it was like, young gee, Neil, young you're Neil, so hot. Love
knives.
Love knives. But young Neil is just like, he's so impressionable he's and so, gullible dude. And young. And so he's just like, he's whatever. A girl finally puppy, likes me. Awesome. But yeah, so they sign the record deal, except for Scott. And then Gideon invites Scott to his venue, the Chaos Theater, where Sex Bob-omb is playing. Because he calls him, and of course, you know, this boyfriend, this BBEG, is going to be the super smooth talking, not at all intimidated by Scott, like, actually actively inviting him to come around kind of guy who's like, come on, like, I'm not threatened by you, come on, see the show.
Yeah, at that point, G-Man or Gideon is definitely establishing dominance. Like,
oh, 100%.
He's absolutely established, like, yo, dude, I own everything about your life right now. Like,
yes. Yeah. He's like, I took your band and they are working for me now. I took your woman and she's back with me. So come watch all this happen at my theater. And like, you just get to sit there, you know, impotently and watch me. And like, ugh, I love it. I also, we passed the scene, but it was so good when, because Michael, Sarah, and Wallace like share a bed. And I died. I died when Michael, Sarah sits up, Wallace sits up, boyfriend sits up. Mistress sits up, and there's four guys in this bed.
and the Scott bed's takes not very no, big.
Scott takes no notice. He doesn't even care that there's like three guys who were clearly like doing stuff in his bed. He's just like, oh, whatever.
I have to shout out my favorite scene. Knives shows up to Scott's Wallace's apartment, and it's knocks on the door, and it's like, is that Knives? It's like, if she's here, tell her I'm out.
Yeah,
and then like, then Wallace is like, oh hey, Knives. It's like,
but the door is wide
here?
Open.
Is so Scott here? And he just darts off, and then it's like, no, actually, shuts the door a little bit towards just Wallace in the window and frame. You just see Scott just
head first
out a window, reach in, grab his jacket, and walk behind Knives in the next frame.
I loved it because he opens it too wide without thinking, and then he goes, "Is Knives here? No." Or is Scott here? And shuts the door enough.
No,
but then Scott is right behind his head doing everything to get out, and Knives like sees him leave, and then he runs off behind her, and she just like turns her head like, "What? Do you think you're being slick? I just saw you.
This is a scene like right before we ran into... the bi-curious phase.
Yes, Roxy, yes.
Who Scott miraculously landed a very accurate boob punch to a shadow lady.
she misty-stepped in the middle of
them.
Dude,
absolutely. I'm so happy to hear y'all just using D&D terms. It's so funny. It's so good.
Dude, I literally wrote a D&D campaign.
Yes, he has
you
written a
full
campaign.
You have fully integrated us.
And hey, I'm actually trying to plan a one-shot at some point, so you've got me like attempting a DM experience, so we're going to see how that goes. Resolving to win Ramona back, Scott challenges Gideon to a fight for her affection, earning the Power of Love sword. Knives interrupts the battle, attacking Ramona, and Scott is forced to reveal that he cheated on both of them, and then Gideon kills Scott, and Ramona visits him in limbo to reveal that Gideon has implanted her with a mind control device. So again, this is just more of the magical realism that I can't handle.
it's a symbolization. Sorry, I've been saying metaphor. I meant symbolization probably for a lot of what was I saying.
I mean,
metaphorically.
I've been saying both. I think it's a symbolization
of the possessiveness and just the control Gideon has over Ramona's life.
The chip is like, I don't know. I think the whole thing is a metaphor for everything. But yeah.
The whole movie is a metaphor for everything.
For everything. Yes, you're welcome. He's in limbo.
Power of love.
Limbo. Yes, power of love. So Scott uses his one-up that he earned from being a grown-up earlier and re-enters the Chaos Theater. But it's like, you know, it's when you restart a boss level so you know what's going to happen.
They just skip the whole cutscene. He skips all the cutscenes
of, you know, the band and of confronting Gideon. Yeah, he just skips through all of it. Which that I thought was very funny because I'll play a ton of video games, but I've played games with cutscenes and I've been like, just like skip because I've already seen
pretty
all
much,
this.
Much
so
Scott
I thought that was
just
very
like
funny.
Beating his way through everything was just, yeah.
Yes. That's what it was. I thought that was funny. He challenges Gideon again this time and he makes peace with his friends and he challenges Gideon for himself, gaining the power of self-respect sword. And after apologizing to Ramona and Knives for cheating on them and accepting his own faults, Scott and Knives join forces to defeat Gideon, which I thought that was pretty
cool. That was cool.
Yeah, I liked that. Because, like, Knives is actually a really awesome fighter, as we see in this. Like, you want her on your team.
Although, I'm very concerned how a 17-year-old got a hand on dual blades.
Dude, it's so easy. You can walk up to Walmart right now and buy two machetes.
I mean, probably, but...
Dude, it is so easy to buy swords.
I mean, as a
You can order swords off Amazon. Yeah, I have two swords over there in the corner. You can just order for like $15 off Amazon. It's so easy.
But still, ones that could sit there and apparently, you know, like fight a digital sword that Gideon magically
summoned. He has his pixel sword. Yeah. That was another thing.
I mean, yeah, honestly, if anything's just like weird in the movie, just chalk it up to magical realism.
It's magical realism.
Yeah. Like, but my brain can't handle it. Because I want to look at it all as a metaphor. I want to look at it all as just that this is how he's seeing his world because he plays video games all the time. So, like, I don't know. Yeah, so they join forces and defeat Gideon. And so free from Gideon's control, Ramona prepares to leave because she's like, I just need to, you know, disappear again because I, you know, screwed everything up again. Knives accepts that her relationship with Scott is over. And at her encouragement, he leaves with Ramona to try again.
Not a truer line has been spoken other than Knives saying, I'm too cool for you anyway.
Yes.
That has not been a more true line. It's like, yeah, no, yeah. That's fair.
Knives is way too cool for him. Like, yeah, she's dorky in the sense of like she's a super fan of things that she loves, but like she is way too cool for him. Like... she can get a guy much more in her lane so easily. Like,
oh, absolutely. You know she probably had a ton of people hitting on her in all of Catholic
school. Oh, 100%. And she was Catholic just like, school. No, I'm dedicated to Scott, as Scott is actively cheating on her. Yeah, no. Yeah, but that was Scott Pilgrim versus the World. So if you guys had to rename this movie, what would you rename Scott Pilgrim versus the World? I know what I would call it.
Well, what would you call it then?
Well, I'm going to have to bleep this, but I would call it Magical Realism Mind and that's what I would call it.
Arcade Acid Trip.
That's pretty good.
Why is everyone including the fact that this movie is just entirely weird?
Because that's the movie. That's the whole vibe.
I would just call it the X Games.
Oh, okay. That's a good one. Okay. That's really good. Okay. I think John wins that one. You got the best one. So, time to guess. What do you guys think this is rated on Rotten Tomatoes critical score?
84%.
Okay.
88%.
You were closer, Sam. It's 82% critical score. You were very, very close. And now for the audience score.
Just because of the sheer chaos, I'm going to give it a 92.
Okay.
I think it's actually going to be a little lower because I think it appeals to a certain section of the population. I'm going to say 79.
Okay, so you said 79, you said 92.
Right.
I believe you're still closer. It was your previous guess, 84%. If you had stuck with that answer, you would have got it right. And now IMDb, out of 10.
7.2.
Okay.
8.2.
Again, Sam, you're closer. 7.5. Dang it. You gotta strengthen up your game here. Go to like a bunch of Disney movies and just look at all the Rotten Tomatoes scores so you start learning.
The gambling with Benton, honestly, has just been...
The what?
The what?
The gambling with Ben.
What?
Just trying to guess gambling? The dice. No, guessing the dice.
Oh! Guessing
the dice. I know what you're talking
about.
You're
putting all your energy into that. Yeah, in our D&D campaign, for people who don't know, one of our players has a deck of many things. And so since John is our DM... He has been rolling out of 100, and if John ever guesses the number that comes up on the 100, he has to draw a card. So that's what we're talking about.
Though, but yeah.
Yes. So the budget for this was $85 million.
Ooh, they made a lot of money then.
No, they didn't.
They didn't?
They bombed hard. It was the biggest flop of 2010. It only made $47 million globally.
Globally.
It's so popular, though.
Well, that's
people
the thing.
Talk about it all the time. Is it a cult classic?
Yeah, it's a cult classic. It bombed when it came out, but then, like, now everybody loves it. But it bombed so hard when it first came out. Like, no one went to see it. Yeah. Because I saw that, and I was like, ooh. But then again, a lot of cult classics, like, either barely make it over the budget line, or they don't make it at all. Like, even Heathers barely made it, like, at all. Right. I think it may have not even made it, but yeah. So that was the deal with this movie. It did not do very well. But I went on Amazon and I found some reviews. The general consensus is pretty good. It's 85% 5 stars. And do y'all want to go positive or negative first?
I like positive first.
Positive first.
Okay, we'll go positive first. So. This is from the user with the most unique name, Amazon Customer, and it says, in my humble opinion, one of the best comic book movies ever, real rating is 6 stars. That's the title of the review. How had I never seen this movie before? This film is awesome. It's now in my top 5 all-time comic book movies. Follow Scott as he has to fight his new girlfriend's 7 evil exes. Fun side note is this movie stars both Chris Evans, Captain America, and Brie Larson, Captain Marvel. The first time I watched it, it took me about 30 minutes to adjust to the editing and directing style.
It also has Superman in it, by the way.
It does, yes. But I swear now, every time I watch it, I see something new to appreciate. I've always been a fan of Michael Cera since Arrested Development, but this is now his defining role to me. Oh, and the girlfriend. Can't think of her name, but she plays Ramona Flowers so dang charming, I really need to learn her name and seek out other work of hers. 5 stars. And then this one was someone who was not as into it, and I'm interested to see y'all's reaction to it. This is from a Jessica Smith, and the title is Stylish But Sexist. And it says, yeah, get ready. And it says, the stylistic elements and performances made this movie kind of fun to watch, but overall, it was quite cliche and sexist. It seemed like a fantasy for a nerdy video game player. 4 very attractive women interested in this one guy, and they don't care that he has nothing to offer and cheats on them. Neither the main male character or the female characters had any substance, just seemed like ridiculous but bland wishful thinking. two stars.
You know what? I kind of agree.
Really?
I hadn't thought about it, but that kind of tracks.
Really? Show your work.
I mean, oh wait, so like...
I mean, I agree that yeah, like it, that it definitely girls, is a nerd fantasy. It,
yeah,
like,
it's
for sure.
Four girls, four extremely, extremely attractive girls, all very interested in this one nerdy little kid.
Because there's Knives, there's Ramona, there's who
Envy.
Else? Envy.
And there's Kim.
And Kim, okay, yeah, okay, I'd forgotten about Envy yeah. and Kim. Yeah.
And to be fair, except for Knives, who actually does have a character arc, and Ramona has a character arc, but none of the others are productive.
Well, Kim...
Except for Knives.
Kim, he sort of makes up with because he apologizes just for,
right,
like, being
right, and, like,
and
like, Ramona has an arc, but, like, none of them are productive in terms of...
Envy has no arc.
Yeah.
She starts and ends in the same place.
I don't know. Like, I don't know that I would go as far as she did, but I get where she's coming from.
I
still really enjoyed it, but I get where she's coming
yeah.
from.
Yeah, I wouldn't go as far as to call it
sexist. Yeah,
I wouldn't call it
that.
Sexist,
yeah.
But again, I get the point she's making.
I get the whole playing to the...
To the nerd boys.
To the male, like, the nerd fantasy...
That you know, like I agree with.
This hyper-attractive, yeah. dyed-haired chick, you know, coming in and sweeping the protagonist off his feet. Definitely a very nerd-oriented, you
well,
know.
And four very different types of women. There's the right. anime fantasy. There's the kind of edgy and damaged, you know, hair-dyed, like,
we
dream
are damaged.
Girl. And then
far
there's...
too damaged.
And then there's, like, a dark, angsty, sarcastic girl yeah. that kind of becomes your friend. And then there's the girl who talks like this and is, like, the big superstar and all that stuff and, like, has the beautiful
Which,
blonde hair
quick
and
side
everything.
Note, I was talking with Danielle about this last night. So the first thing I ever saw Brie Larson in
was
Captain
mistake.
Marvel.
Yes.
And, look, I don't think it's her fault. But
it's
she
not.
Was not good in Captain Marvel. She was boring. It was one of the more boring superhero movies ever. She was not good in Captain Marvel. And so I didn't think I liked Brie Larson that much. I thought she was an overrated actress. Everything else I have seen her in
is
since
amazing.
Then, she is so good.
Yes.
Like, she is one of my favorite actresses now.
Talented actress.
She's
like,
incredible.
She is so
no,
good.
No, the first thing I ever saw her in was Room. And I know you
yeah.
haven't seen it. Have you seen that, John? Not the Room. Room.
I would have to see a cover or at least like the title page.
But. Yeah, I mean the concept is Brie Larson is stuck in a has been kidnapped as a teenager and has been kept essentially as like sort of a sex slave and now she's living with her son from the kidnapper in this tiny room and has lived there for like 10 years.
Yeah, it's like a thriller. It's like
yeah,
a thriller.
I've never seen that.
Well, it's a drama.
I
thriller.
Think
yeah.
I would remember that if I had seen
it's,
that. I
it's
definitely
an
did not see that.
Incredible movie and. She that was the first thing I ever saw her in, and because she got kidnapped when she was 16, she has like the brain of a 16-year-old, even though she's like nearing 30. And she does a fantastic job with it. But
yeah, and she's great in Community. She is mm-hmm. so good in Community.
She's
like,
great in Community.
Yeah.
Like she's an amazing
she's
actor,
such a good
and yeah, they didn't give her good direction. And you even see her try as Captain Marvel. Like, she does try. I was telling Sam last night that in Endgame, when she comes up to Spider-Man, she's like, hey, Peter Parker, you got something for me? And that was the first time I saw any personality, like, in her character. And I was like, see, there she is. She's coming out a little bit. They
That's
gave
just,
her something.
It's just the writing was...
They just didn't direct her well.
No.
They didn't give her any direction.
They made her generic, overpowered female character.
Yes. They
and
said,
that was it.
Yes, that was it. And they said, cool, so you just, yeah. this is who you are,
you
go
can
do
be,
the thing.
You can be everybody, go do your thing.
Almost
right.
any,
yeah.
Almost anyone could write, you know, like a stereotypical or, you know, like overpowered female character. It's hard to make dynamic
Mm-hmm.
female characters. Mm-hmm. It's very easy there. You know,
I mean,
like,
it's hard to just make dynamic characters. Like, for
I mean,
like, forget about
why,
female. Like,
that's
just
why,
any character.
That's why, you know, Superman is either done really well or done really bad.
Because most people just make him generic
yeah,
superhero.
Because Superman is so overpowered that you have to find ways to make
mm-hmm.
him an interesting character.
Yeah.
And it was the same thing with Captain Marvel. They just didn't do a good job with it.
Yeah.
I firmly stand on the belief that Marvel has... some of the best written superheroes, while DC has probably some of the best written villains.
I think that's probably true. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the DC comics are better, like so much better. But yeah,
like the actual comics.
The actual comics,
yeah.
DC comics are so much better than Marvel. And like, and I like Marvel comics, but DC comics are on another level.
No, I agree.
I think I love the realism in DC comics.
Yeah. DC is really, really good. Anyways. A little superhero tangent here. So where was I? There were a ton of really cool, like, fun facts with this movie. So, the four cast members that made up the band, Sex Bob-omb, spent several weeks learning how to play together as a band. Mark Webber, Alison Pill, and Johnny Simmons all had to learn their instruments from scratch, while Michael Cera had to dumb down his bass playing so he didn't outshine everybody else.
Of course, Mike.
Yes. But they were really good for people who had just learned, like, like very recently. And Edgar Wright obtained permission to use the famous theme music from Legend of Zelda by writing a letter to Nintendo saying it is considered to be, quote, the nursery rhyme of this generation. And then several sound effects from the game can also be heard throughout the scenes in the practice room. And he was also allowed to use the Seinfeld theme music for the sitcom style sequence.
I was like, yo, this is straight up out of Seinfeld. Whenever it, like...
Yes, because he had a sitcom scene, like, where there was the laugh track and, like, everything in the background. Yeah,
for sure.
It was just an old sitcom for a second, which makes sense because he's actually, like, happy. And so he's like, again, that was my whole thing, was this is all in his head. This is how he sees everything. Mm-hmm. It's like, he's suddenly happy, so his life is a sitcom. Like, you know, there's, like, a laugh track and, like, everything's funny and, like, quippy and all this stuff. But yeah. And also, whenever the moon is shown, it is full and there's a hole in it, because it's mentioned that Todd punched a hole in there when they dated. And in the graphic novel, Todd actually punches a second hole in the moon for Envy Adams. So there are two holes. And then at one point during the battle between Scott and Lucas Lee, a fake New York City backdrop is ripped open to reveal the Toronto skyline. This is actually an in-joke about the custom of filming a movie in Toronto while disguising it to look like New York or some other American city.
Okay.
Yeah, so they were making like an in-the-industry joke about it. When Scott opens the door to get his package, Michael Cera did actually throw the package over his shoulder and into the bin after 33 takes, most of which are seen on the bloopers. And in a film with so much CGI and special effects, Edgar Wright wanted the throw to be real for authenticity. But the signature is actually a visual effect. So the throw is real, signature is not real. And Edgar Wright also stated that the movie was done in the style of a musical, but instead of the characters breaking into song and dance, they break into a fight. So that was the whole weird, like, suddenly there's a fight happening, is he was imagining it like a musical.
Yeah, because I think, actually that tracks, because normally in a musical, anytime something gets emotional,
that's when you start singing. And in this,
anytime you get emotional, you fight somebody. Which, honestly, either way, both result in a sense of catharsis.
Exactly. And this the battle between Scott Pilgrim and Matthew Patel is actually done in the style of a Bollywood fight scene. So they straight up, like, looked at old Bollywood and, like, did that. So the original concept for Scott Pilgrim is based around two premises. The first was the idea of, what if, after a life of playing fighting games, someone confronted you and you actually had the ability to fight like a Street Fighter character? And then the second concept came about when Brian Lee O'Malley was dating his future wife. This is the thing I told you about. So it wasn't Edgar, it was Brian. When he learned that she had dated three different guys named Matthew, he came up with the idea of the League of Matthews, and this developed into the League of Evil Exes. And then, of course, that's where Matthew Patel came from, was like a play on that. And we were right, Sam. The stunt doubles for Lucas Lee are Chris Evans' actual stunt doubles.
It just makes so much sense to do that. Like, you know, they're going to be on set anyways. Yeah. Just use them.
those were his actual stunt doubles, but only a quarter of the doubles actually look like him. And Ramona's hair colors, I thought this was super cool, correspond with the colors of the three goddesses from Legend of Zelda series. Pink for Din, blue for Nehru, and green for Farore. I'm probably mispronouncing those, but...
I think so, but... I'm not super familiar. I know of the Zelda series. I have not played much of it, so
I just thought I missed that reference. That they, like, based it on that.
John doesn't get a video game reference.
What? This is the whole reason we have you on this podcast. Get out.
Wow. I guess I'll just
Envy Adams' band, The Clash at Demon Head, is named after a lesser known Nintendo Entertainment System game Clash of Demon Head, 1989. And the name is also a play on the punk band The Clash. So that was pretty cool. The Clash is very good. And then there are several subtle digs at aspects of hipster culture and the perceived pretentiousness of the music industry throughout the film. So one of them is, after just witnessing The Clash of Demon Head play on stage, young Neil casually states that you should see them live. They're so much better live. And then upon Scott's first entrance into the Chaos Theater, Como, which is Robbie from New Girl, is saying to the same group of people, it's just that the comic book is, their first album is so much better than their first album. Like, and then during Scott's second entrance into the Chaos Theater, Como is saying to the same group of people, it's just that the comic book is better than the movie. And like, just rubbing all this pretentiousness, which also missed the funniest moment to me, which is when Scott goes, have you seen a girl with hair like this?
Yes.
And just scribbles. It's and he goes, oh yeah, Ramona Flowers. And goes,
didn't catch that? I can't believe I didn't say this. No, we missed talking about it.
Yeah, we didn't talk
this
about it.
This was actually probably the moment in the movie that made me laugh the most, and it was so stupid. It was when Nyes first comes into the apartment and he goes, oh, can I take your coat? And she goes, oh yeah. And he takes it off and there's a coat rack right there and he just drops it on the floor and walks
off. Didn't even know that.
I laughed out loud so hard when that happened. It was so great.
Well, no, apparently
I loved it so much.
Apparently the original thing for that scene was that they were going to he was going to hold up a picture of Ramona from the comic book and like show that, but Edgar thought that it would be so much funnier if it was just random.
That's fantastic.
I love it so much. So Kim Pine, the drummer, only blinks once during the entire movie. Apart from that, she only breaks her gaze 3 times. She lowers her eyes twice and has her eyes closed when announcing Sex Bob-omb for the last time. Every other time, she is just dead locked on to Scott with absolutely no blinking.
I love it.
Yes, I thought that was such a great character choice. Whenever a picture of The Clash at Demon Head is shown in the record store, you can hear the store alarm going off in the background. Just a subtle warning of the absolute psycho that's the head of the band. And yeah, I think those are all the fun facts that I had. Nice. So, if we could recast each other in this movie, who would we be?
I'd cast Danielle as Nyes.
Why me as Nyes? No, I'm not perky enough to play Nyes.
You could act perky enough.
I would have to disagree. I'd say she'd have to play Julie.
I would love to play Julie.
How do you keep doing that with your mouth?
That's no, just because I aspire to be Aubrey Plaza, so I would be very happy to be Julie.
That's okay. That tracks.
Yes.
Yeah, Julie I think would be a better choice.
John.
Who could John be?
John could be G-Man.
Sam, you could... You could be G-Man, but that's just because you can easily play a BBEG. You could also play Robbie's character.
Yes.
The guy who knows everybody.
Oh, Yeah, that's fair.
You could also play Wallace.
I think you could play Wallace really well. I could also play Wallace. You could play Wallace. You could play...
As a completely straight guy, I've had to play many gay guys, so...
I think you could play Wallace. I think you could play Todd, for sure. Vegan boy. I think you could play him.
I don't know. I'm not...
I think he would be a challenge, but yeah. I think you could play him.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, no, I was going to say, like, honestly, out of anybody, like, Todd is probably, like... I guess he could play young Neil.
Oh,
I
could play young Neil. That's because you already are young Neil.
I could play young Neil, absolutely.
You would be the perfect young Neil. Yes.
John could also play, what's his name? Michael?
The talent?
The figurehead?
Yeah, Steven, whatever his name is.
I don't know what his name is.
Yeah.
I just remember him being called the talent. I was like,
yeah,
all right,
he's the talent. Yeah. You could play him. You could also play, I'm trying to think, I know there's someone I'm forgetting. No, I'm not going to think of it. It's gone now. It's too far away. So favorite and least favorite moments from this one.
Oh, there's so many favorite moments.
I'm trying to think of like specific things.
The tea. I loved the tea moment. The tea moment and the coat moment were my two favorites.
Where she just reads off this incredibly long list of tea. She actually, apparently, the props department kept telling her, we can just give you a list and you can read it from a sheet of paper. And she said, no. And she insisted on memorizing that entire list of like 30 teas. Yeah, that was funny. I mean, my absolute favorite has to be just the picture, the flashing of the terrible picture. And, oh, yeah, Ramona Flowers. Like, that was just such a good moment. Least favorite?
I don't know that I have a least favorite. There's nothing in the movie. I don't know. There was really nothing in the movie that I actively disliked.
Like, there was not. I'm just trying to think of what did I like the least is more of what I'm trying to think of. I guess it's not necessarily a moment, but it's the fact that nothing about the twins was ever said, and it was just that, you know, they played keyboards.
They just existed.
There
wasn't like a
that lead. Was probably my least favorite, was that we got nothing on them. I was like, we at least got something
we
on
we don't
every
know whether she
character.
Dated them at the same time or different times. We know nothing.
We have just, nothing.
That's fair.
I think that was my least favorite.
That was also probably the worst of all the battles.
I mean, the dragons were awesome. You know how I love my dragons.
Yeah, I don't
but,
know.
Yeah.
I would have to say my favorite is he punched the highlights out of her hair.
Okay.
It's just so good. And I will agree that the lead up to the fight was very anticlimactic.
Of the twins fight?
Yeah, the twins, because there wasn't like any like, at least like things were like, you know, picking up and it's like, oh, like circumstantial. This was just like, oh yeah, you perchance. It was the only like perchance meeting that felt
you just
forced.
Happened to be battling her two exes.
Right. It's the most like forced perchance scenario.
Because everybody else came looking for him. They didn't. They just happened to be there.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I will admit though, the Katayami twins versus Sexpa Bomb was probably one of my favorite fight scenes.
Okay.
See, different opinions,
yeah,
man.
That's
fair. I agree. It wasn't my favorite fight scene, but I did love the dragons. Because if you put a dragon in anything, I'm going to be like, hell yeah. Like, I'm never going to argue with you if you want to put a dragon in a movie.
You just put two... If you put any two kaijus fighting together, I'm going to lose it.
Any two what?
Kaiju. Big monsters. Godzilla.
Oh, big
King
monsters.
Kong.
Okay, I see.
Big monsters. That, yeah. Nerd lingo coming out there.
All right, so let's say out of 10 X's, how would you rate Scott Pilgrim versus the World?
8.3 evil X's.
All right, 8.3 evil X's.
Nothing I actively disliked. It was just a little much at times.
That's fair. I think that's very fair.
I'll give it 9 evil X's because
okay.
I don't... If you sit there and give it as like... if you were to give, like, a bunch of, like, you know, like, options, like, I wouldn't hate that option on the list. I wouldn't be, like, I will actively, like, this will definitely make it to, like, the top three on a movie night for me. But I won't go out of my way to see it.
Okay. That's
right. Like, because I've seen this movie 3 times.
Yeah.
I had to have been, like, there's nothing really for me to watch, and I generally just kind of like the chaos in this movie. So, I just often go with that one.
I'm going to give it a solid 7 evil X's just because for my brain, having to accept this as magical realism is very difficult for me. I loved so many things about it and the comedy was absolutely fantastic, but there were some times when I felt like the fight scenes went on a little too long or they were a little repetitive. And then, you know, just my brain has to accept something like this as like, either a metaphor or like, I don't know. It was hard for me to wrap my head around it, as you have heard through this whole podcast. So if you're like me, like, you'll probably still be able to enjoy it because I was still able to enjoy it a lot. That's why, you know, it still gets a 7, but I had to knock off some points just for like the difficulty that my brain had with it and just the length of some of the fights and everything. But I wouldn't be mad about watching this again. If someone put this on, like, again, John, I probably wouldn't seek it out, but if someone, like, just turned it on, I probably wouldn't fight him with it. I would just be like, okay, you know,
I might would put it on. Like, if I'm just sitting at home with nothing to do and I want to watch a movie, I might put it on.
And see, right, I wouldn't be mad if someone put it on. I'd be like, okay, like, sure.
And say what you will, but Chris Evans can rock a chin strap.
Oh, my goodness.
Chris Evans is just a beautiful man.
I will admit
Chris
that,
Evans yes. can pretty much rock anything, but I was less... I told Sam, because Sam was like, that beard is terrible, and I was like, I'm less focused on that beard and more focused on those brows. What is going on? He had full-on cartoon.
Yeah,
like,
it was pretty bad.
Like turned-down eyebrows. It was insane. But yeah, so I'd probably give it 7 evil X's out of 10. It was very good. Wouldn't be mad about watching it again. Probably won't seek it out. But if you like and can accept magical realism, you will love this movie. And if you really just love, like, really funny and smart comedy, you should watch it either way, even if you can't accept magical realism.
Great. Because
I still enjoyed it a ton, and the comedy made me actively laugh out loud, like, a lot of times. So, yeah, I would recommend it. Just be prepared for, if you're like me, your brain might not be happy about what it's watching. But, yeah, unless you guys have any final thoughts, I think that is all we have for this week.
That's it.
Just like last week, we are still holding auditions for our audio drama, Call of Cthulhu.
Yes, please audition.
Yes.
They're still open.
Yes, we're still taking submissions. You can send, you know, just emails about information, or you can submit to auditions.madartists@gmail.com, and then you can email us here at the podcast at banterbox.madartists@gmail.com. I fixed it. It wasn't as bad as the other time I messed up when I just said something bonkers and not even correct. At least the other one would have still been an email of ours.
True.
But yeah, so you can email the audition email for more information. I'm going to put both of those emails in the description, so you can go down there and look, if you want to make sure you're spelling everything right. But yeah, we're still taking submissions. You do not have to have voice acting experience, or any experience. If you just want to try something new, send us an email and we'll give you a shot. And we'll send you sides and character breakdowns and all that good stuff. We're going to have callbacks, later this month, for
just,
all
just
who submit.
Just try.
Yeah, so you can audition any point between now and March 14th. That is our final cutoff for auditions, is March 14th. Yes. But yeah, so, oh, also, really quick, we are launching technically tomorrow, but it'll have been earlier this week when the podcast is released, our first start at some interactive Facebook and Instagram story stuff for the podcast. So on Mondays, we're going to have our first little guessing game, where we're going to put out basically a super boring one-sentence description of whatever we are watching, reading, commenting on that coming Wednesday. And you can guess on our Facebook and Instagram stories. Correct guesses. We will message you personally and offer to give you a shout out if you give us a review on that week's podcast. And we'll shout out any social media account you want to shout out, if you want to shout out a company, a website, just a service you provide, anywhere that people can reach you, we'll be happy to do that. That's sort of our outreach to artists that we're trying to do, because we know right now, especially, artists need all the work they can get.
It's hard time.
And Tuesday, we'll be putting out a second hint, which will be the general genre of what the production falls into. So you'll have 2 days to guess. Incorrect guesses will not be called out the names, but we will be posting just like the movie poster or like book cover of any incorrect guesses, just for funsies, on our stories. And you can guess as many times as you want. And then every other Sunday, that's when we're going to be holding our virtual request line. On our stories, we're going to put a genre of either movie, TV show, book, etc. on our stories, and people can submit requests, and then we will choose randomly from those. And the person will have the option to submit questions, you know, the winner of the drawing. Any questions they want us to answer. If they have specific comments they want to make about the movie, they can submit audio clips to us. Or they could even potentially come on the podcast and comment along with us. So that's all going to be happening starting this week and next week. So we're very excited about that. So thank you guys so much for listening in. And we will see you all next week. Bye-bye.